Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I want to talk about CAMHS, first of all, actually speaking of dysfunction, because it won't be news to anybody here that the system doesn't work the way it's meant to. You'd be familiar with stories of long waiting lists or no services in some parts of the country, a postcode lottery, a lack of follow-up, or children lost in the system is how I think it was described in the Maskey report a couple of years ago. So that's where we are. Where we want to get to, it's pretty straightforward, is that if children need to be seen, they're seen in a timely manner and treated accordingly. Now, the Irish College of Psychiatrists have a suggestion on that front, how to get us closer to that point. And Dr. Patricia Byrne is with me from the College, a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist. To Patricia, you're welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for joining us.
So what is your suggestion of reform today?
So our suggestion for reform today is based on governance, not always the most exciting piece, but it's really essential because governance is the system by which a service is run, how it's planned and operated, how you make sure a system is run efficiently, and how you recognise and respond to risks in the system. And as you quite rightly highlighted, both the Maskey report and the Mental Health Commission report show that the HSE has repeatedly failed over the last 20 years to put in a good system of governance and to adequately resource or fund or recruit or run CAM services, leading to really poor outcomes for children and families who have never needed our services more. We are at an epidemic of mental health difficulties where it's now estimated that 1 in 5 young people of school going age have a mental health disorder. It has never been higher. The need has never been greater.
So where are the shortcomings in governance at the moment, and what is it exactly you would suggest to change?
Yeah. So the shortcomings in governance are that CAMHS has never been properly developed and planned. For a long time, there was not a recognition that children and adolescents could have severe mental illness. And that's what CAMHS deals with. It deals with very moderate to severe disorders that can be life-threatening for young people. Severe depression with suicidality, anorexia, psychosis, severe anxiety, where young people may not have been able to leave their house for months and sometimes even years. So there has been a lack of funding and planning. Services have not been developed in a coherent way across the services, and the staffing with the necessary skills mix have not been put in. So we operate using a multidisciplinary team. So we understand that children have lots of different experiences, school, home, family, and we need a variety of professionals to help us deliver that service. Psychologists, occupational therapists, social workers who are specialists in working with families. The government has not recruited the staff that are needed with the basic skills mix to do that. They have not put in a system where services are able to be performance managed. So when there's poor service, that it's able to be highlighted and addressed. There is no system where risk is being acknowledged. And currently at this time, the teams are operating very much in silos of provision, trying to do the best they can with their limited resources, but not having a system to plan and develop.
And those silos, you don't mean geographical silos, you mean the psychologist operating slightly independently from the psychiatrist, from the other therapist. Is that it? I get to give the example, I'm just thinking the way you describe it. If somebody goes into a hospital, they've got a heart issue, you've got your cardiologist, you've got all your different nursing staff as well. You might have physio and physical therapists, you might have social workers involved. But you know who the clinical lead? The clinical lead is your cardiologist, ultimately. That's the person in charge of your care. Does that model transfer onto CAMHS?
So That is a really good example of the model of CAMHS, and both things have happened. So the consultant is designated under the consultant contract and vision for change as the clinical lead of CAMHS, but nobody else in CAMHS have that in their contracts. So in teams that work well, there's a clear recognition that the consultant is the clinical lead and clear accounting and clinical responsibility. But in teams where that isn't working well, there has been times when people have not responded or not reported into the consultant.
Okay.
And there hasn't been a system to be able to address
so
that.
Your contract says you're the clinical lead. I'm kind of a different discipline dealing with the same patient. My contract doesn't say you're the clinical lead. So I might not report to you. I might think, well, she's nothing to do with me.
Exactly. And if there is somebody who's struggling for any reason, it's very hard for the consultant to be able to meet and support them. We are proposing then a solution to this where the consultant is clearly the clinical lead and all staff will be supported and trained to work in CAMHS and report into the consultant where clinical matters, but also to develop another clinician role on the team to look at team management and function. Simple things such as even organising leave to ensure that there's a minimum staffing at all times to do that. Looking at how the team is functioning. Are there children being lost to follow up? How are our wait lists doing? Where are the areas we're doing well and where are the areas we're not? So that person then would have the time and the resources and specific management responsibility to be able to develop and lead that team. So it's broadening out the team. And what's critical is it's very rare to have clinician asking for more managers. We're looking for clinician managers, people who understand that. And there's many people on our clinical teams who would be fantastic at doing that role. This isn't brand new. This was first suggested by the government as far back as 2006 in a vision for change, introducing what they called a practice manager. This was a key recommendation of the Maskey report. And we are just calling for the government to follow through on its own commitment.
Yeah.
Follow through on your own mental health policy. Follow through on your commitments after Maskey and the Mental Health Commission. Put in an approved governance system.
And if that were to happen, if those recommendations were to be followed and we had a much clearer governance structure over it, there would still be shortcomings. You know, you mentioned kind of there's a lack of staffing in different parts of the country, and that's why there's this postcode lottery to a degree. What are the next pieces in the puzzle you need to solve?
Yeah, that's really important. So that's kind of the local level. At a regional level then, CAMHS has not been represented at regional area management for mental health services, and there was no national oversight of CAMHS in planning for that. That has been addressed with the introduction of a national clinical lead for child and youth mental health. However, what we need is that middle step between the national overall policy and the teams on the ground. So we are proposing that all CAMHS services have what we call a clinical director, who will be a lead consultant psychiatrist, planning and coordinating care in an area, supported again by a lead clinical service manager who would again do that. So we can think about how to identify, how do we think about things at a regional level? And that allows much better service to ensure you're not getting a postcode lottery. You might turn up to CAMHS team A in one area and not have a psychologist. You might turn up to CAMHS team B in another area and not have a social worker.
Yeah.
And that's the reality on the ground.
And sometimes that reality, I mean, you're talking about people who live close to the border, the demarcation between two different areas. And you could have neighbours, quite literally neighbours, and who get completely different levels of service.
Different services. And that's why, because there has been no national planning and structure. And the elephant in the room does come back down to resourcing.
Yeah.
What we know is we have, compared to what was estimated to needed 20 years ago, they estimated they needed over 100 teams. And we have just over 70 teams. We have 60% of the staff needed for 20 years ago. Anybody knows that the mental health crisis is completely different to what it was 20 years
ago. Yeah, well, we have a million more people, first of all. I mean, just sheer mathematics would suggest you need far more people. And then, as you say, there's been a recognition of kind of the degree to which this problem is much more severe for a lot of kids.
Yes, and it is genuinely more severe. So we absolutely need the staffing, because what happens is you can arrive into a CAMHS team and you may not have psychology, you may not have social work. No CAMHS teams in the country is fully staffed. So they are operating to do the best they can to a limited few. And that means your options of treatment are far less. that people are coming in, they may not be able to be treated for as long as they wish, and it also increases wait lists. Or many children are then lost in the middle who are not deemed severe enough to reach CAMHS, but then they're directed to primary care services where there is wait lists even worse than for CAMHS. So they have over 7,500 children waiting more than 1 year to access primary care psychology, which is supposed to be that first step. So young people and their families are being left behind across the service, and it cannot continue.
Dr. Patricia Byrne, consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist and chair of the Faculty of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at the College of Psychiatrists, the Irish College of Psychiatrists. Patricia, thanks a million for coming into us.
Thank you very much.
087 1400 106 if you want to get in touch about that. If you've got experience of the system, good or bad, because like I say, in some parts of the country, I mean, people have a great experience of CAMHS. You only have to go a couple of kilometres up the road and it's a different story. Naomi Connolly is with me and Jenny Flaherty. They are both members of the group Families for Reform of CAMHS. And unfortunately for both, have direct experience of all of this. Naomi and Jenny, you're very, very welcome to the show. Naomi, remind us, what is the situation you and your children find yourself in?
Well, most recently, my youngest child, he's 11, he's being discharged from CAMHS because he's autistic. And they say that he doesn't have a moderate mental health issue. He's school avoidant, and they've discharged him because they're saying it's his autism that's causing him not to go to school. But I've had previous experience with my middle child, also autistic, school refuser, was too severe for primary care and not severe enough for CAMHS because it's not considered moderate to severe mental health. My eldest attended CAMHS for self-harm and suicide ideation and had a great rapport with the psychologist. The psychologist was on rotation that only stayed 6 months. When she left, my daughter didn't gel with the psychiatrist and ultimately she got discharged. I brought her for counselling through a charity and unfortunately she landed back in A&E again with self-harm and suicide ideation, was sent back to CAMHS. She didn't want to go. We asked for a female therapist. We knew we'd have to wait a bit longer. And when we arrived on the day of the appointment, the female therapist unfortunately had to take emergency leave and she was met with two men and that was it then, it was game over. To be fair, the head psychologist in our CAMHS tried to find her a psychologist that she would gel with.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen.
It's interesting, you mentioned the autism, because this is a story I've heard time and time again. It's kids like that falling between two stools that, you know, you've got a dual diagnosis. Disability services say you've got a mental health issue there that needs to be dealt with. Go to CAMHS, and CAMHS will say, you've got a disability issue there. You need to go to disability services, not us.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Now, the HSE's line is that autistic children and other children with other disabilities will be seen by CAMHS. But unfortunately, if they're not considered high risk, so like my eldest daughter, neurotypical, had suicide ideation and self-harm, she'll be seen by CAMHS, but there's no early intervention for children with CAMHS. You have to be really unwell before you get to CAMHS. And sometimes one of the reports that were done by Families for Reform of CAMHS found that children's mental health deteriorated on the waiting list as well.
Yeah, not surprising. I mean, it's like any health issue. If, you know, you had an issue with any other physical part of your body and you weren't seen for months or longer, things would get worse. What, Naomi, would make a difference to you? So this kind of governance structure, those changes that were suggested today by the Irish College of Psychiatrists, you know, they matter, but even they acknowledge that's not the stuff that makes a kind of an impact on the ground. After you get the governance structures right, you've got to go out and resource the system and get people working in it so you don't have this postcode lottery as well. Because somebody in your situation living somewhere else in Ireland, this is the awful thing, will have a totally different experience at CAMHS. Might be perfect because they've got people working in the role. So what would make a difference for you and your kids?
Well, definitely the resourcing is a big one for them to bring in staff, but retain that staff and not have them rotating every 6 months. That doesn't work for staff. It doesn't work for children. They build up a rapport with a clinician and then the clinician is moved to another service or another CAMHS area. So they need that longevity of clinicians. I suppose they should be, they're a mental health service. They should be there for early intervention as well and not wait until someone is actively self-harming or has that suicide ideation. You want to help them with their mental health.
Mm.
So that early intervention as well. And also, don't just dismiss a child because of their disability.
Yeah.
They do suffer from mental health issues as well.
Jenny Flaherty is with us as well, as I said. Likewise, a member of Families for Reform of CAMHS. Jenny, what's the situation in your house?
So I was actually on the show before in 2023, Kieran, with the same issue. My daughter is diagnosed with an intellectual disability and CAMHS set up intellectual disability teams all over the country in theory in September 22, which essentially shut children with intellectual disabilities out of regular CAMHS. Now, in reality, those teams are not set up. We live in Leitrim and Sligo Leitrim doesn't have that team. So when we eventually did get through to CAMHS, after there was an urgent referral, and after a year we got a meeting with CAMHS, and just to kind of tell us that because my daughter had an intellectual disability, they couldn't treat her. She would need to go to this other team, which didn't exist. So we were essentially taken off the waiting list. That was summer of 23, and still nowhere. There's still no team. She's not on a waiting list. We had previously lived in the UK, so CAMHS there, just a month before we moved back to Ireland, diagnosed her with mental health disorders. So there's no denying that there is a need there, and there's been several referrals done since our first one, and we just keep getting a letter back saying she should go to CAMHS ID. It's not in your area, so go back to your GP.
So it's just this merry-go-round. GP will refer you to CAMHS. CAMHS will say you need to see CAMHS ID. CAMHS ID doesn't exist in this area. Go back to your GP. And then you go around and around and around.
Yeah, and we're in CHO1, which is Cavan, Monaghan, Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim. And none of those counties have a CAMHS ID team, so we can't be referred to anywhere in our CHO. The HSE have apologised to us because of this, and my daughter's case is on
the
risk.
That's great for your daughter, an apology.
Yeah, and the apology was that the services weren't up to my expectation, and I did ask that be changed because my expectations aren't the problem. She's on a risk register because there is a need that's not being met by the HSE. This has been brought up in the Dáil. Simon Harris said last June he'd meet us, and then didn't reply to any of our emails or letters since. Micheál Martin said he'd follow up on it. Again, he didn't.
It strikes me, no more so than in education, I'm sure there are unique skills maybe for a mental health professional when it comes to dealing with somebody with intellectual disabilities. You know, there's things that they have to learn to cope with maybe a little bit differently. At the same time, this is a bit like the perfection being the enemy of the good, isn't it? You know, somebody in the CAMHS service might not have that specific training to deal with someone with an intellectual disability, but see them nonetheless, do something rather than just say, that service doesn't exist, so we're going to literally do nothing.
I think almost 3 years on from the launch of CAMHS ID, they need to admit that that didn't work and open CAMHS back up to children. And the thing is that children who were referred into CAMHS before the launch of that CAMHS ID are being treated with CAMHS with an intellectual disability. So it's not that they can't treat those kids. I know that historically they've seen those kids. It's just that when this CAMHS ID team, which was great on paper, was launched, they shut them out and they can't recruit. And last month in Sligo Leitrim, they did manage to recruit a consultant, only a consultant for the CAMHS ID team. And she left after a week because nobody else was on the team. They had recruited nobody else. So she never got to see any children.
Gosh.
So it's going to roll on and on, and children like my daughter decline and, you know, are left with nowhere to go.
Yeah, we shouldn't forget that. We can't forget that, that ultimately that's what it's about. And
I was laughing at the state of the doll today. I mean, it is farcical, but it's also highly disrespectful to people who have serious issues and to watch what is going on there while people in this country are suffering, not just with this issue, but with so many issues. Mm. And they have the disrespect to act like children like that. It's just ridiculous.
We're going to hear from some of those children in a few minutes time. They've been speaking outside Leinster House. In the meantime, Jenny, thanks for talking to us again. Jenny Flaherty and Naomi Connolly as well. Naomi, thank you, both members of Families for Reform of CAMHS.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.